Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in the zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Ron Coomer, one of God's great men, and he joins us now on the Arturo Tire Hotline. Arturo, your hometown tire, Arturo.com. Ron, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mikey, David. How are you boys doing today?
Doing well.
We live the dream. I got to ask you, and I know that this doesn't mean anything to anyone, but it is maybe a matter of pride. I saw that that BetMGM listed the Cubs as 83.5 win total for this season. They have won 81 games with three games left. The over-under is still in play, which, again, I mean, there's only certain sick individuals that are following this thing, and I happen to be one of them. But does that matter? I mean, I think they won 83 games last year. Does it matter if they match that total, if they can exceed that total and maybe win somebody a $20 bet in Vegas?
I'm going to guess that the players and the staff probably don't know anything about that. I know I would not have. I would assume there are a lot more people in the city of Chicago that know about that, Mike, more than the guys on the field. Friends of ours, maybe, might be people that would really know about that. And David, so, yeah, I don't necessarily think guys know. I do believe, though, that they probably have read about where they were last year, where the wild card was last year. They missed out by one game this year. That's not going to be the case, and they have a chance to at least play, you know, win the same amount of games as they did last year. So I would think they would understand that part. The betting side, I think pretty much the clubhouse is pretty removed from that.
So, Ron, there's a story in the Sun-Times this morning about Cody Bellinger talking about what's ahead for him. We all know about his contract options. He can opt out or he can return to the Cubs, and he said he's not in a position yet to make a decision. Certainly Scott Boras, his agent, will have a say in that. Have you picked up anything along the way since we last talked? I mean, obviously these things are hard to predict. Cubs with Bellinger, Cubs without Bellinger, does it change the way they would approach the offseason? And do you feel like one way or another is leading right now?
I'll say this. I hope that Cody returns back to Chicago. That's my hope. I would think the Cubs hope that also. You know, if you're not where you want to be as an organization, and one of your key players has a chance to leave, that just means you got to add another piece to fill that spot. And he fills a couple different spots on offense and on defense. So I'm sure they want him to stay. And I know I do. I can say this, just in seeing him the last couple days, we were on the road and just came home. And I just know where he stands with his teammates just from you know, looking at things. His teammates really like him. He's one of the leaders of the team. He's one of the guys that people congregate around, you know. So I would think that all of his teammates and everybody, you know, that put the uniform on want him back. That's for sure. So I can say that. I would think the organization wants him back. And, you know, I would think he's really enjoyed his time in Chicago, even though the team hasn't won like they wanted. And you get to that point where you know you've got a good group and you want to help push that group over the finish line to get where you want to be. So I would anticipate him coming back probably more than leaving, would be my thought right now.
When we think about next year will look like, and listening to what Craig Counsell had to say, and listening to kind of Jed responding to that, it's just been really interesting to sort of contemplate what next year will look like. Do you believe that Kyle Hendricks' start on Saturday is his last with the Cubs?
Whether it's his last, that would not surprise me. I think he's getting that start. I got to believe he's treating it that way, and so are the Cubs. We'll see how the offseason goes. But, you know, that's kind of the rumor around, Mike. So I'll say that. Nobody knows for sure, you know, and I haven't been in those meetings to find out where they're going with someone like Kyle. But, you know, for our fans, you think about it, you know, he's won more playoff games than any pitcher in a Cubs uniform.
Yep.
He's pitched the biggest game in Cubs history and was involved in that game and did very well. Pitched him to the World Series against Clayton Kershaw, you know, and throws a game against the Dodgers that, you know, the 8 innings and puts him into the World Series. So when you talk about a guy, you know, that's been a great Cub, you know, on the mound, there's 4 or 5 that you can think about in organizational history. He's got to be one of them.
So, Ron, you look at the Cubs and the Reds this weekend and say they win 2 out of 3 and they end up with 83 wins, exactly the way they finished last season. Mm-hmm. On the day they introduced Craig Counsell, all of our expectations were higher than that. When you look back at this season, as I'm sure you guys will during the broadcast and the next couple of days, how will you put into perspective what went wrong and how bad of a failure it was?
Well, you know, that's not for us to determine how it went wrong and if it was a failure or not. There were a lot of guys that it was a success for individual guys, you know, for some guys. I think, you know, that this team came up short from where they want to be. But, you know, that's for, you know, Jed and Carter and those guys to, and Crane and them and Tom eventually to come up with the ideas of what they need to do. But I know they're all everybody's disappointed. It's been a disappointing season as far as not playing in October. And it hurts even more when you're in Philadelphia and you watch a team like Philly celebrate on the field and then you see them celebrating in the clubhouse, you know, and we all know some of those people over there. So you're happy for them, but you know, you remember, and I know Pat and I talked about this off the air. You know, we go off the air and you're watching them celebrate and you go, God, we really miss that. You know, because there's an energy around that. When you're that type of team, you're not even thinking of the end of the season right now. That's you know, over the last 2 weeks when people start talking out, you know, and you hear the, what are you doing postseason? Where are you going? What are you doing? That's not even a thought. That's like, you know, we still got a month to go, and we're in the middle of this charge and this energy that you got. So you just hope you get that back, right? That's what you're looking for. So Cubs got some work to do. I think Counts sounded off pretty strong about what he felt. And I think for Craig, this year, this is one of those years where it's you had to evaluate a lot of what you had,
right?
Whether it be on the field, on a staff, and the people that are that exterior, that group that supports the on-field staff. I mean, you know, it took a while to find out what everybody does. And you know, so I think that's – it'll be interesting to see where all that – if there's any changes to that or, you know, what his input is now that he's seen it for 100 and – or will have seen it for 162 games.
Convos with Coomer is sponsored by EOC Audio, Chicagoland's leader in audio, video networks, and home automation, EOCAudio.com. I'm curious, Ron, along those lines, when you think about the way this team, I mean, let's put it this way. When you start looking at, you know, who's got the highest WAR and how you line up, it seems like they've got a lot of guys that have to play well top to bottom for them to be good. They're not just reliant upon some star players. I'm curious if with all the young guys coming up, with the, you know, improvement of the roster within the team, is that the way to go, or do you need to go outside and, you know, they're going to have to get another starting pitcher. We know that. They're probably going to need some bullpen help, and and you'd like more slug. But I don't know, can you get that stuff internally, or do you have to go outside the organization?
I would think you've got – you've seen pretty much what you have. And some of the guys that you're – you know, that are high-projected, you know, young players are still a ways away from being big leaguers. You know, the, Casey might be a guy that's, you know, close, I would say. I don't know exactly how he did this year, but, you know, a couple months ago looking at on Casey, he was a guy that, you know, I watched in spring, big body, powerful guy, used the whole field. He could be a guy that's close. But if you're talking about – counting on them, that's not the fix to be playing 90-win to 100-win baseball. Those guys you hope do well, but you can't count on a bunch of young guys to come up and fill in and think that's the solution. So you look at all the teams that are playing in October right now. We just came from Philly. Look at that club. You know, you got a powerful ball club, man, and they're, you know, and on the mound, in the bullpen, and look at their lineup. We were in L.A. not too long ago. They're the other top team. 1-3, you know, I my head snapped when Pat said, is this the best 1-3 spot in the lineup in the history of our game? And I went, wow, that's some statement. And then you start looking and going, no, he's not far from off. I mean, how, you know, you got one of the best players to ever play hitting leadoff, and So there's some things there. To me, if you slug is not the total answer. I think you need some guys that can bang the ball out of the yard, Mike, but you also need guys that play the game. You look at some of the other teams that are going to be playoff bound, and they're not doing it by hitting the ball out of the ballpark. If you get those guys, boy, it sure makes things easier if you're hitting the ball out of the park. But you have to understand what you are as an offensive player. And if you're not that guy, you're not a 40-home run guy or a 35-home run guy, you've got to do something different and slash the ball around, use your speed, you know, and do those things to be a quality big league player. And when I say that, that means a winning big league player. So, you know, winning baseball.
Right.
That's what I mean. Yep.
This week they bring up Kevin Alcantara from AAA. Yep. Say Suzuki was injured. They had an opening and it made a lot of sense. We learned that he has a nickname, the Jaguar, apparently.
Yeah.
He's not shy either. He said that. You look at his season. You look at Owen Casey's season. Matt Shaw was the AA Southern League Player of the Year, the MVP. He may be ready in spring training. They're blocked. How do you expect the Cubs to address that this offseason? Because those guys might be ready to go. They're guys who were in front of them. That would lead you to think that there's going to be a lot of trades, especially after a season that you have to kind of qualify as disappointing. Is this going to be a very busy offseason in your view?
I would say yes. If you feel like those guys are ready for the big leagues, the way you'll find out is the other teams. You know, the other teams, if you're looking to make substantial moves in your big league group, and shore up the spots that you have holes in so you can be playing next month, you're going to find out what the other groups think of your minor league players. You can, you know, assess them all you want, but what their value is determined by what you can get in trade, right? That's what you're going to find out. So we'll find out where the rest of the groups feel about some of these guys if they're traded, or if the Cubs trade away the big league player and move them up. That's how you're going to find out. But you know, that's like any business, but I look at, you know, there's some good players down there. There's no doubt. And we'll just see, but right now I think just looking at our big league club and what you have to fill in, it comes, as Count said, they've got some work to do to catch up with some of these teams that are, you know, that are ahead of them. They really do.
I'm curious, Ron, you know, we all know PCA has closed the season so well, and he looks like a bright part of the future. Michael Bush has had a good year, and he looks like part of the future. I'm curious about your take on Isak Paredes playing a position where he was an all-star. You were an all-star at that position. Is he an answer as the third baseman? There, he's under contract for, I think he's got 2 years left after this club control. Is that the third baseman? Do they need an upgrade there? What are your thoughts on him?
I would say him coming in, whatever the situation was for him, Mike, obviously it didn't go well for him. He didn't swing the bat well. He swung the bat well, you know, better the last week and a half or so, maybe. Maybe 2 weeks, but week and a half, let's say, and you know, looking more like the guy they were hoping they got. And trade it did not go well. He's definitely a guy that can play third base. That's no doubt. He's fine defensively. He's got good hands. You know, that part's fine. But you got to hit in that spot, and you know he's got to make some adjustments in his approach. I think playing in Wrigley Field, you can't just think you can pull the ball and elevate the ball to left field all the time and think that's going to work. And I think he found that out. And you're going to have to make some adjustments to your game like every player has to do at Wrigley Field. Wrigley is a great hitter's park when the wind's blowing out. It's not so much when the wind's blowing in, and you got to do some different things to be successful. So I'll say this. I hope that when he comes back, he's in good shape and he's ready to go and he's healthy and all those things come spring training. Because as of right now, he's the third baseman. I don't think they have many more options. So he's the guy, and that's why they traded for him. So you need him to step his game up and be that guy and be that middle of the lineup hitter.
Coombe, the Reds are in town. They fired David Bell. They need a manager. There will be speculation about potential candidates. That could be a pretty good job in a division where they feel like they could make some ground with all those young players and talent. David Ross's name will come up if it hasn't already. Knowing Rossi as you do, what do you think about that fit and how that would enhance that rivalry a little bit?
I would think it would make a lot of sense for the Cincinnati Reds to hire David Ross. I really do. I think, to me, David did a good job in Chicago. I feel like managers who manage and haven't managed in the minor leagues, there's a curve there, a learning curve of what to do, how to do it, who to listen to, who not to listen to. And I think there's a lot there. And I think with David getting a year off to look back on how he did, what he did, how he responded to different situations. You're going to get a guy that's going to, you know, he's been writing down and watching and writing and getting a vision of how to do this job differently than he did it the first time. And I think you benefit from all those from this year off if you're a team hiring David Ross. You know, Joe Torre was not known as the best manager in baseball when he first started managing and didn't manage in the minor leagues. I'll tell you, when I played in New York, I don't know if there was another guy better than him, you know, managing in the big leagues when they were winning World Series after World Series. So I think Cincinnati would make a lot of sense to me with his, you know, past history in Cincinnati for him to play there or manage there. That would make a lot of sense.
He's apparently grown hair. Have you seen the photos?
I saw that yesterday. Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations to him. It's a miracle. You know, you put that stuff on your coconut and poof, you know, like a chia pet, you know?
You must be a pitch man, Coombe.
Like a chia pet.
Put that stuff on your coconut and poof.
You think we could get we've got some other commercials on our air right now that are little, great. You know, so why not the chia pet too, you know?
Why don't you and so Pat good. Workshop that over the weekend?
See, and then you know who's going to have to read that? That's getting me. The Hall of Famer's not reading that. I'm out. Yeah.
Great stuff, Coombe.
You're the best, Rod. Thank you, buddy.
It's been great talking to you guys this year. I know baseball season's winding down, but always great to be with you guys.
Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Coombe. That's Ron
Coomer.
Pleasure.
He's the best. And we got Mark Grody. Grody time next. Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
It's Grody time, and that means it's time for Mark Grody with Mully and Haw.
Bears.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's that one guy with that one song. It's Grody time! Always a joy to talk to Mark Grody, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, aturo.com. Good morning, Mark!
Morning, Molly. Good morning, Haw. How are you guys doing on this fine Friday?
Doing well.
Yeah, we live the dream, and we are very excited at all the possibilities in the world. And since today is a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, it's not a game, Illinois.com, I think you're the perfect guest, Mark, to take us home with this Bears vision you have, how it unfolds, what happens, how much better they are running the ball. I mean, it's going to be amazing.
This will be the first, if we're going to jump ahead here in the segment, this will be the first time, I think, in 3 weeks on this show, the Molly and Haw Show, because this is the only place that I reveal Bears picks. It's the only place that I do it. And I do think this will be the first, no, I'm serious, this will be the first time in 3 weeks that I am picking the Bears to win, despite everything. And there's a lot, and you guys have been talking about a lot this morning, but I do think that this is the week that the Bears get back on the board and even up their record, and things will start to feel better. Not fixed,
wow,
but feel better.
You're so excited.
Yeah.
You wanted to throw that in at the beginning of your segment rather than at the end, so we're not building toward anything. The suspense is over now.
Well, I thought Molly kind of led me into it.
Okay.
He said that I got all the special things. I just go with the flow. You know, I'm not, you know, I got to go with the flow.
Let's go back to Thursday, Mark. I felt like you did ask a very good question, and you put Shane Waldron on the spot a little bit, and I don't think he answered it adequately. You wanted to know where Matt Eberflus ends and Shane Waldron begins, essentially, on Sundays, and if the head coach has veto power over the offensive coordinator. Why did you ask that, and what did you think about the answer?
Yeah, I asked the question, David, because that's what the Bears have been showing us and telling us. That is specifically that Matt Eberflus, the head coach of the Bears, who we all agreed coming into the season felt more comfortable, felt more confident, felt more authoritative, that he is more involved in the offense. HBO Hard Knocks showed us that. Like, it almost seemed, and this doesn't mean bad, but blatantly showed us that Matt Eberflus is a teacher, that he's going to sit and he's going to have these, and that's great, that's fine. I have no issue with Matt Eberflus taking more control of the offense and sitting there and reviewing tape with Caleb Williams, but come game day, when Caleb Williams is into the 50s in terms of throwing passes in a close football game, my point in asking the question was, is there a point, where Matt Eberflus says, hey, let's tone it down a little bit, let's run the football a little bit, or I don't like the idea of that play on fourth and one. Is Matt Eberflus truly involved in the offensive conversation? And if he is he using his voice? This is, you know, it's a fragile point in the season right now because of the high expectations to win. You have a new offensive coordinator who, I haven't given up on Shane Waldron, but there's no way to suspect or to expect that he has this thing down yet. So I just wondered if there is any collaboration going on and if the head coach is using his rightful veto power. And you're right, David, we didn't really get an answer out of it other than, I mean, there was some substance to it where he said that, there are certain situations where Matt Eberflus, from a defensive perspective, says, hey, this is what you could look for, use that information based on this. But it just felt like there were times against Indianapolis where Shane Waldron could have used a little help from the head coach.
We'll get to the details of your pick, but I also picked the Bears. And part of that was a kind of a response to some of the situation with the Rams, right? I mean, it's not necessarily looking at the Bears as a dominant team, although they're good defensively, they'll be good defensively at home. But it's all of the problems that the Rams bring with them. Three offensive linemen out, both of their excellent wide receivers out. They still have the coach, they still have the quarterback. I wish I felt more confident in the Bears running game, and I wish I heard a little bit more about that out of the offensive coordinator, who I think he attempted to explain why they're running out of the shotgun, particularly inside the 5-yard line, but I don't know if that didn't ring hollow to me.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of, you know, I guess essentially making it more comfortable down there for Caleb Williams, allowing him the possibility and the space with which to run if he needs to. I just think it's and what we don't know precisely is, Molly, how comfortable is Caleb Williams with it? You know, because Caleb Williams is going to give an answer of, you know, he is along for whatever the Bears, whatever situations they're putting him in. I don't think that Caleb Williams is at the point where he's imposing his will. I have a feeling that day will come when he gets better. But yeah, right now, I don't know that Shane Waldron is going to change that. Like, I think that's a comfort zone for him. I don't know if all the criticism that has hit him this week will wake him up, or if part of the meetings that they seem to have had this week to, you know, communicate will change that. But yeah, I mean, I was a little bit miffed with the answer too, but it just sounds like there's a comfort zone there.
We don't want Mark miffed. We do not want that. A mad Grody is not a good Grody. So Grody,
don't miff me. Don't miff me.
Tell me this. When you were listening to Mercedes Lewis talk about the need for the coaches to stop walking on eggshells, his words, not mine, and how this isn't Pop Warner, and they have dudes in the locker room, meaning veterans who can take hard coaching, which apparently they're not getting. What went through your mind, and how tenuous is this situation?
A couple things went through my mind. Number one, wow, that is some serious honesty coming out of the big dog, Mercedes Lewis, telling us what's up and what's going on. So my first thing was, wow, this is substantive. This is very real stuff. Now, I had maybe some of the same reaction that you guys had and your listeners, in that, oh man, we got a coach that was walking on eggshells, that's afraid to get in the face. Like, what is going on here? So yeah, I get that part. However, my biggest takeaway from it was, good catch. Good job. 3 games into the season. Like, this could have never been spoken. And on many rosters, it never would have. Everybody would have just let it be. Lucky for the Bears, they have a strong enough leadership group, apparently, led by Mercedes Lewis, that was able to stomp this out in week 3 when it's not too late. So I actually think, like, we could talk about this. It's terrible that Shane Waldron is like this, and how could you hire a guy that's going to be afraid? That's fine. I am open to those arguments, but the biggest thing you should be feeling is, this is fantastic. This is great. 3 weeks into the season, as opposed to, this is usually something like Bears-wise, if it was a normal Bears season, it would be week 14 when we found this out, and the Bears, the season would have been wasted, and they'd be telling us, there'd be whispers about the offensive coordinator not being afraid of his players, and we'd all be kicking that around. Hopefully this solves a problem, as opposed to just talking about it. That he was honest with Waldron, and he was honest with the media when the question was asked. So net overall, this is a win for the Bears, believe it or not.
I'm curious, when you heard from just the injury list, with the idea that Kevin Byard now has a back, the idea that Roma Dunze was limited with a hip injury, Andrew Billings, goodness gracious.
That's the one, Molly.
Well, that is just hard to believe, because you're already without Zach Pickens. You've been without him forever. I don't know that they're not comparable, but I'm just saying his backup is out anyway. Can you afford to lose him? I mean, does the new injury list scare you?
Yeah, it does. I was sitting in my cubicle out at Hallis Hall, sitting next to Adam Hoge, and when that thing came out, he and I looked at each other like, oh man, Billings. And what I said to him was, Bears don't need this. They got their hands full with the offense. It was like, I always use the analogy, like, they're the defense is the good child. Like, you can't screw up. We got enough issues with the offense and the problems that are there. So yeah, if Andrew Billings is out, they're essentially down to Byron Cowart for that spot right there. And we all know how good Andrew Billings has been as far as Byard, not as essential, but he's obviously a big time captain out there and a good player. So let's see how good Jonathan Owens is. If he has to be in there, Elijah Hicks could get some time as well. But yeah, those are concerning. I will tell you guys that, you guys know that Keenan Allen is limited. We were told yesterday that we would get to talk to Keenan Allen today, Friday, in the Bears locker room. I'll be out there. So that definitely feels good. It portends well. I know, right? That's the word of this show.
It does.
For Keenan Allen to be playing this week, or at least giving it a try. It was also good that Darnell Wright returned to practice. For some reason, I thought that was going to go the other way all week, and that's not the case. So that's the good news. But, Molly, you nailed it with the Billings thing. That to me was number one with a bullet in terms of the concerns on the injury list.
This segment with the great Mark Grody is brought to you by your local Ford dealer. Shop now at buyfordnow.com. All right, Grody, 30 seconds. Who starts at running back and how effective will he be?
Oh, man. I think that they stick with DeAndre Swift. They really do. The starting in the case of running backs, because they'll use a few guys, I think is relatively ceremonial. I don't think that if they're getting the production out of DeAndre Swift that they would stick with him long. I think we could get a big dose of Roschon Johnson this week. You know, you've been hearing it. You've been it's out there. They know what. And he looked good early. He looked really good early in that game. And for that matter, I'm talking about the Colts game, Swift actually looked good early in the game against the Colts. So let's see if they could actually get it going against a pretty porous Rams defense as well. And I know how porous the Colts supposedly were. So I do think it's Swift, but I think you're going to get a good dosage of Roschon Johnson this week.
Did you pick a score? Or are you just...
I'm going to do it right now, Molly. Okay. I'm going to do it right now.
Okay,
I'm
hold
do it
on right now. Wait, I'm holding
okay,
my breath.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, hold your breath. Haw, hold your breath as well. Now, let's keep in mind, let's make sure we remember, the Rams did beat San Francisco last week. That does ring a little bit true for me. But, hold on. The Bears will win. The Bears, this whole thing stinks, huh? The Bears will win 24-14 over the Rams. There will be a defensive touchdown for the Bears in this game as well.
Man.
And you want some Caleb numbers?
Please.
Caleb Williams will be 21 of 32 for 214 yards, a touchdown, and an interception.
Wow. Man, you have that really thought this through.
I mean, no, he's got the list in front of him.
He really
knows.
Thought this through,
he's
Brody.
He's been to rehearsal.
I'm thinking it through.
Yes.
I just got back from my Mully and Haw rehearsal guest spot. So, yeah. They tuned me up. They got me warm. They played the tape of the pick six. They're like, here's what the boys have been talking about today. Be careful for Haw. Haw's going to come at you on this. Be ready. Mully is on you. Get ready. So, yeah.
Be ready Sunday, Grody. I'll be next to you.
We love you, Mark. You're a great man. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Bye, guys.
See you then.
Talk to you on the pregame. You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday. It's presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And before Chicago takes on L.A., tune in Sunday morning from 9 a.m. to noon for your local Ford dealers pregame show. It's right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's and Sony Pictures Wonderverse Chicago. And you can join Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley. And I'll be there as well, as hanging on their words, as you will. And we'll get you set for the game. And it all can be heard here on The Score and on the Odyssey app.
There's a big college football story that I want to address quickly when we come back. Because it's something that's really very interesting.
I love it. Mully and Haw on The Score.
Hold on.
Yeah, we all know that. I mean, we've had a roster change at the quarterback position, and we're certainly excited about the two that we have trained for this moment, the opportunity they have now to run the offense. It's been a really good week of preparation.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of UNLV head coach Barry Odom. And Barry's talking about what is going on after their quarterback. They have a quarterback change. Matthew Sluka, he is the quarterback at UNLV. He announced, I believe he transferred from Holy Cross.
He went from Holy Cross to UNLV. This is a big story nationally, not because we care about UNLV football, but because of what it suggests about college football and the state of the NIL, commitments, agreements, pay for play, and where the NCAA is lost in all of this.
An assistant coach, he claims, promised him $100,000 if he went to UNLV. He went to UNLV, and there was no $100,000.
Well, $100,000 because the offer has to come from a collective, and it has to be outside of the school. And there are a lot of technicalities that are being invoked and referred to and leaned on here. The bottom line is the young man left one program for another with the expectation that somebody, based on somebody's assurance, that he would receive $100,000 to make the move. And he's received what he says is $3,000. His father is also involved in this. He's come forward because he feels like this is his right to do so, and he was bilked. They're off to their best start in 40 years.
Yes.
3-0. And
where's my $100,000?
He's a big reason for that. It's a gutsy move. It also, UNLV, what bothers me about it, a couple things. But first of all, the fact that they're now invoking that UNLV Athletics interpreted his demands as a violation of the NCAA pay-for-play rules as well as Nevada state law. Please.
No, that's Please. Nonsense. That's nonsense.
But they're now going to, by the letter of the law, refer to an institution that has no teeth any longer in the NCAA. At some point in time, somebody's got to step forward and put the student athlete. Okay, I shouldn't say student athlete. Put the young man and the quarterback's welfare ahead of everything else.
Our friends in the desert are attempting to do so.
That's an interesting twist this morning.
Yes,
definitely an interesting twist.
According to Brett McMurphy, does a great job with college football. He says that that our buddy Mike Palm from Circa Sports, he at the instruction of our guy Derek Stevens, he's gone to the university and offered to pay the $100,000 that the kid was promised and get him back and playing so UNLV can carry on with their season.
So that's a $100,000 offer from
Circa,
an outside source, not at the school, Circa. Derek Stevens and Mike Palm, or Derek Stevens and Mike Palm has made the offer or been empowered to do so, which would give Matthew Sluka the money that he says he's been deprived. I think that's a interesting, generous gesture. I don't know if it will be accepted because now all the attention is on him leaving. Can you unring that bell if you go back? There's been some dissension, some dirty laundry aired. But if it's just about the money, maybe that will be just about the money and he'll go back and resume everything. You don't want him to lose a season of eligibility because of this. He wants to take a redshirt year. Today's college sports, though, it just underscores how big of a this is what happens when this isn't regulated. This is what happens when you have vague and different interpretations of the rules. And Matthew Sluka, I think, is a great example of how you need to get things in writing. You need to have to, this process needs to be regulated and formalized, because right now something was lost in the translation and he's going to suffer as a result, and the program will too.
Yeah, I think it's a pity, and I think that it goes to a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, a lot of the, we know that the portal and NIL, it's a mess. It's a mess, and it's the Wild West. And this is an example of a kid who thought he had something coming, and he doesn't have it coming. A coach makes a promise to a kid, and the coach isn't able to follow up on it. And then the school, then he's trying to protect his last year of eligibility so he can go somewhere else. And I don't know that there are any schools lining up, but I hope that he comes back. I hope that they accept the offer from Circa and the kid gets to play. But that's going on all over the place. There are other guys. Didn't I see Dave Portnoy is offering like $3 million to help Michigan get their next quarterback?
He is offering $3 million.
Of his own money.
Basically to annually fund the Michigan quarterback position.
Yeah.
Because that is how you guarantee that you're going to get a quarterback that's a proven commodity. Look at Notre Dame with Riley Leonard. Why did he transfer from Duke to Notre Dame? It's not because of the weather in South Bend. It's because of the platform Notre Dame affords him and also probably the money that he was able to earn and generate through the NIL. The NIL can be terrific as a means of rewarding these student athletes, in quotes, for what they do and to take advantage, let them in on some of the money. But it's got to be controlled better than it has been. And UNLV is a great example. He was promised things that didn't come through. Is a verbal agreement binding? And was he duped by somebody who, you know, just wanted him to make a decision? There's all sorts of technicalities, because at Holy Cross, you can't agree to something while you're a student somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can't sign an agreement.
Because he's a student at Holy Cross, he had to withdraw and then go to UNLV. So whatever promise was made, they couldn't come up with an agreement before he went there.
So if they're going to invoke that, though, at what point do you start to hold guys responsible for oral agreements or commitments? Recruiting, college football, college sports are all about decommitments. And how do you react to that? Are those binding agreements? It's just...
It's a mess.
It is a mess.
It really is. I tend to generally be on the player side in all these things.
Well, but if you're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds, I am definitely on the player side, because they have been exploited for too long, and I think that they have an opportunity now to make up for some of that lost time and lost earnings, but there's got to be a better way than this.
All right, Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.